Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hour number 2, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. Call TJ's team today to see why they're referred to so often. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keys are here with you on this Thursday morning. We will be joined at 7:30 by Paul Danner Jr., who covers the Bengals for The Athletic. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports for his weekly visit from 8 to 8:30, talking all things NFL. In the meantime, taking your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025, our phone number. Joe, the Wednesday injury report out yesterday for the Titans. Luke Gifford out again, did not practice Wednesday. Elijah Molden not practicing with a hamstring injury. Skoronski not practicing with the abdomen. And no Tier Tart yesterday with the knee. Burks, a limited participant with a knee, and so that means he's on the injury report after not being on the injury report last week. And Harold Landry, hamstring, a limited participant as well. Josh Wiley, by the way, had an illness yesterday. He's a limited participant, so we'll see if he can heal up as the week goes on here. But Tart, Skoronski, Molden, Gifford not practicing yesterday for the Titans, and now Treylon Burks back on the injury report with a knee after not being on it last week.
And I need to be reminded, that was not what Burks had earlier.
Meaning what?
He had an earlier injury, didn't he?
It was the LCL, wasn't it?
Okay. I thought that he had a separate from the knee situation in week one, but I could be totally wrong on that.
Well, let me go check.
Did he not have a hamstring?
He had a knee.
Okay, it was knee. Okay, well, never mind.
Let me check week two. Just
should not be this confusing for me this early in the season.
He did miss practice in week two for a personal day.
Okay. All right, maybe that's what I was thinking of. No. So, obviously, Burks could be something that, you know, kind of lingers a little bit, but, you know, you expect him to be okay. You certainly don't like to see the word hamstring attached to Elijah Molden.
Nope.
You know, he's had the soft tissue stuff going on, and, you know, Skoronski's going to be interesting here. I mean, a lot of that whole situation is just pain tolerance, but you think about that, having that surgery and then trying to play NFL offensive line anytime soon after that.
Doesn't sound fun at all.
Doesn't sound great. And also the Landry hamstring limited is not a great thing to see either. I mean, look, it's not a loaded up injury report or anything, but it's a couple of those are concerning. Today, as always, we'll shed more light on it. The Bengals, very light list, and Burrow full participant. Yep. So
he's going to play.
He's going to play for sure. Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a question of because you could tell last game, you could tell all year that the normal mobility, he's normally very good at climbing the pocket and extending plays, and he just doesn't. And then here and there, ripping off 12 yards.
Sure.
He doesn't really have that. So if he has a little bit more of that, that's bad news for the Titans. I suspect he's still going to be mostly the sitting duck quarterback Sunday.
I would assume so as well. But, you know, the fact that he was a full participant on Wednesday, I guess, suggests that maybe at least it's getting a little better for Joe Burrow. So we'll see how mobile he is coming up on Sunday against the Titans. Speaking of quarterbacks, Joe, the conversation on Ryan Tannehill beginning around the league. And Dan Graziano and Jeremy Fowler put together this piece on ESPN.com the other day where they're just kind of going through different topics around the league. And they end up on quarterbacks. They're actually talking about Russell Wilson like being the first quarterback to be benched this year in their mind, that if things keep going the way that they're going right now.
Who's his backup, by the way?
Jared Stidham.
Okay.
Which I'd probably just keep playing Russ.
But that's all of Colorado.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. But this is what Graziano had to say. Ryan Tannehill ranks 32nd in QBR, and he's the same quarterback room as a guy who was the 33rd pick this year, not to mention the guy who was 86th in last year's draft. Things look all kinds of wrong in Tennessee after putting up 94 yards of total offense in Sunday's loss to the Browns. Tannehill's not playing well. Derrick Henry doesn't look right. DeAndre Hopkins doesn't appear to be fully healthy. I would think there will come a time this season when the Titans want to take a look at Will Levis and or Malik Willis. But, man, if they're open to trade Tannehill in the final year of his contract, he probably needs to string together a couple of at least decent games, right? To which Jeremy Fowler said, Here's an idea that a league exec floated to me, and I'm curious on your thoughts. Tannehill to the Jets. He costs less draft capital than Kirk Cousins, has a connection with the Jets passing game coordinator Todd Downing, former Titans play caller, $27 million salary, is modest for a reputable NFL starter, and the Jets just need someone who can get the ball to Garrett Wilson on third down, and Tannehill can do that. What do you think of all that?
Well, first of all, the initial stuff, this is Graziano initially.
Correct.
It's yep.
First mute. Correct.
Yep. He caused you to mute because he was so off on his analysis. This is classic box score scouting. Look, I don't expect everybody to watch every game, but I would expect people to pay close enough attention to, if you're going to analyze a player like this, to understand that in week two, he was exceptional. And so, yes, the numbers are bad. Ryan Tannehill was, I said this on a charitable loss to Jared yesterday in Jared versus Joe. Congratulations, Jared. You know, Ryan Tannehill was an F in week one.
Yes.
He was an A in week two. So you read that and you haven't watched the Titans this year and you think he's just been bad. Also, you come away with the idea that it's really that he's the problem. Week one, yes. So I give Tannehill an F. I give Tannehill an A. And I would give him an incomplete
no grade last week.
Yeah, there's just or if you force me to grade Tannehill last week, I'll give him a B. I don't have issues with him. Maybe taking a sack, and I'm not talking about the one before the half, one earlier where they could have been in field goal range. But Ryan Tannehill is better than that assessment this year. So also. The Jets talk. I mean, hey, like we've talked about, if it gets bad, then I think it's absolutely worth the Titans talking about and exploring.
Well, there's one thing in there too that Graziano said that I don't know that I agree with. He said Derrick Henry doesn't look right.
Yeah,
I mean, is that I don't know that my takeaway from Derrick Henry and the way that he's played through three games is that he doesn't look right. I mean. I thought he looked great in week one against the Saints. I mean, he had 10 carries, 51 yards in the first half, had another 50 yards receiving, and then he just barely got the ball in the second half. In game two, I mean, it was a grinding performance from him in game two. 25 carries, 80 yards. I mean, I didn't think he looked bad in that game, but it was just one of those grinded out performances, had a touchdown in the game. I mean, last week, the stat that Nick Suss brought up with us earlier this week says it all. He had 20 yards rushing. He had 32 yards after contact. What does that tell you? About Derrick Henry last week. So, like, the idea that Tannehill's not playing well and Derrick Henry doesn't look right, I think is misinformed analysis here.
That's doesn't look right, though haven't watched, actually watched. No, it's – I mean, look, if you're saying, he just doesn't look right in this last game, yeah, I know. It's tough to try to run the football with four people tackling you.
Seven people at the play call.
I mean, Tannehill's getting the call to his helmet, and Derrick Henry just got tackled. Oh, crap. Oh, Derrick got tackled. Eight guys just tackled him. I'm sorry. Well, I'm going to go back to what this exercise I did this week with our fantasy writers. And I mentioned this yesterday, but, I mean, it's been out for a day. So, let me just – so, again, now this is not ranking the running backs in the NFL. It is ranking the fantasy – and that's fine. I mean,
sure.
I mean, I can't put Derrick Henry as a top five fantasy running back right now because his offensive line is what it is. But here, let me read the analysis on Derrick Henry here, okay? So this is, let me make sure I have the names right. You know, it's Gene Clemens, it's Jay Felicio. Okay, so this is what Gene said about Derrick Henry. He said, I don't believe this is the end of Henry, but it may be the end of the Titans offense. It looks lifeless and unimaginative. Now they're not even able to feed Henry the ball. If he's not going to get carries, he can't be the force he's been during his career. Okay, that's fine. Falling down this list is all about his offense, not about him. I think that analysis is, you know, I get that. Jay says, I don't expect a complete fall off the cliff. I fear the days of a dominant King Henry are past. The Titans offense is putrid. Second fewest yards per game, 240. Third fewest points per game, 15. And then Tyjae Spears is out snapping him. That's all true. Okay, I thought somewhere there. Basically, my response to all this was like, you know, he to me looks as dynamic as he did last year, but the offensive line without Skowronski, I'm making it 32 in the NFL. Let me ask you this: if you took Derrick Henry circa 2019, whatever the best version you think of in the playoffs that year, or the 2020 2,000-yard version, or the 2021 before he got hurt, whatever. That stretch of Derrick Henry, best back in the NFL, period. And you put him on the field Sunday in the exact same game. What's he do?
11 carries, 29 yards.
Yeah.
He gets nine more
yards.
You
got 9 more yards? Okay, there you go. I mean, seriously, that's just the reality. Now, if you took this Derrick Henry, who played Sunday, and you took him back in time, you know, like took him back to 2020, he probably doesn't get 2,000 yards. He doesn't hit some of the home runs that he hit back then. But I bet you he gets 1,700, 1,800.
Oh, yeah.
It's just – I'm sorry, but, like, I think some of this – and, again, a lot of this analysis from these guys is on point, the offense. I don't agree that it's unimaginative. Sometimes maybe it's too imaginative. I just think they can't block. Or in the last game, they couldn't block. They couldn't block Cleveland. If it's going to be a consistent thing that they can't block, well, then you can move them down the list of fantasy running backs. And you're Tannehill, trade them away. Someone tweeted at us about talking about trading Derrick Henry away. Trade Derrick Henry away too. Okay. I don't know what they're going to get for him, sure.
Well, I mean, the bottom line is I still think Derrick Henry is fine. Now, having said that, they do have to find a way to try and get him going numbers-wise, right? Like, they got to find a way to have their running game be a little bit more efficient. I mean, right now, Derrick Henry is 16th in the league in rushing, which is – you're just not used to seeing that through however many times. I mean, he's still behind Nick Chubb, and Nick Chubb didn't play in half of a game against the Steelers and the whole game against the Titans. So, you know, there's still some work to be done to get Derrick Henry going a little bit. Can the Titans do that? That's going to be the question. We'll get into that. Take your thoughts on Derrick Henry and the Titans, 615-737-1025. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Tune in to 93.3 Classic Hits tonight for MTSU football. The Blue Raiders will kick off at 6:30 on the road against Western Kentucky. Pre-game beginning at 5:30. You can hear all the coverage on the 93.3 Classic app and at 93.3 Classic Hits. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, live from our 102.5 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, discussing the Titans and Derrick Henry. How did the Titans get Derrick Henry rolling here as the season continues? Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Mac. Mac, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, thanks for listening. The only thing, I'm not an expert, but I think they need to disguise his run better. I mean, they pull him out, and then when they do put him in, everybody knows he's going to run the ball. So I think they leave him out on the field and kind of work him into other plays so that they don't know when they're going to exactly give it to him. That's all I got to say.
Thanks for the call, Mac. So what do you think of that, Joe? Do you think the Titans, it's still telegraphed too much when Derrick Henry is on the field? Because I actually think through the first three games, and it's a small sample size, I actually think they've done a decent job to this point of maybe being less predictable when Derrick Henry's been on the field to this point.
Yeah, no, they have been. Now, there are some moments. There was the receiver group kind of telegraphed it in a couple situations Sunday against the Browns. So, you know, there is some element of – I mean, I think they've worked real hard to not be obvious with their personnel groupings and with their formations and even with – when Derrick's in and out, you know, as we've talked about, he's not been out on first down a fair amount. It used to be guaranteed. But there's also some element of, you know, here it is, stop it, that you have to be able to do in the NFL too. I mean, you're trying to outsmart your opponent and you're trying to find advantages and you're trying to keep them off balance. But there is also some level of block your person in front of you and, you know, get 4 or 5 yards. I mean, one thing that they don't do nearly as much, and we've talked about this some this week too, but, you know, the outside zone stuff is kind of faded in favor of more gap stuff. They tried to, like, you know, they had this really good toss crack play that got Spears a big gain. I think it was early in overtime, right, against the Chargers, yep. And they tried some of those toss plays, and it just didn't work out. I don't know what's working against the Browns. I don't think anything's working against the Browns. Zone, gap, you know. Reverse,
option.
Play flicker, Statue of Liberty. You know, like you can't block people. You have no chance. And so this last game, I just don't know. Now, look, I think the plan, especially in terms of pass pro, needed to be better and it needed to be Yeah, don't let Myles Garrett destroy the game for you, which they did. But as far as Derrick Henry in that game, I don't know. I don't know what the schematic answer is. If you are so beaten across the line like that.
Oh, that's the question moving forward. Like on Sunday, obviously, you know, the Bengals have a good front. I don't think it's as good as what they just saw in Cleveland. But run blocking, is it, how much better is it? Was that a one game thing from the run blocking standpoint, all this, or are they going to struggle with that part of it moving forward? Now, the other part of this is Skoronski. Like, what does his availability look like when he's back in there? How much better of a run blocking team will they be? Because I think Skoronski can maul some guys. So they're obviously missing him.
Dillard right can now. Too.
Dillard can too. Yeah,
that's the thing. You know, that's where he's at his best typically.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it makes a it will make an absolute difference.
Josh on the text line
played
says,
one game and they looked different.
They did. Yeah. Josh on the text line says, we just need to flex the schedule and play the Texans a couple weeks in a row. Derek's numbers will be back to normal at that point. He does seem to annihilate the Houston Texans.
Good point. CJ Stroud might throw for 450, but good point.
It's true. Adam in Portland says, I appreciate all the work put into trying to figure this team out, but to be honest, the real answer feels like it's just a bad team. When you have too many areas that are liabilities, your team is officially out as a winner. We have a few good players, but we may need to dig these plants up by the roots. And y'all know how big of a Titans fan I am. This is from Adam from Portland.
Wow.
On the text line.
Adam from Portland's going there. Boy.
It's not good.
Yeah. I usually count on Adam in Portland for a little optimism. Doesn't seem to have a lot right now.
No. Jeff from Hendersonville on the text line says, too much Spears. Nathan from Lawrenceburg says, if you're the Titans, do you extend Henry or do you trade / let him walk? This is from Nathan from Lawrenceburg.
Yeah, look, this is a question we talked about all offseason, and we'll talk about a lot more. I mean, it's just like that's one of those that's so hard right now.
First of all,
yeah,
the body of work is incomplete on that, right? I mean, a lot of the decision from the Titans standpoint on Henry, I think, is going to be how he looks the rest of the year, right? I mean, he'll be 30 in January. Number one, can he stay healthy the whole year? I mean, that's going to be a big part of it, because if he does, then I think you have a legitimate decision on your hand. If he doesn't stay healthy and Spears starts to look a lot better and, you know, you're moving to in a different direction, like is Tannehill going to be gone? Like that, I think all those things could influence it. So I just think the picture is still really incomplete on the Henry part of this. You got to wait and see how the rest of the season plays out, if he stays healthy, and how productive is he going to be if he does stay healthy.
Yeah, and how much of his production or lack thereof is about him? And how much is it about other people?
Right.
I mean, Sunday it was about other people. I'm sorry. It just was. So it's just hard to answer. Again, if things go bad, if Adam's right, and some fans right now who are throwing in the towel are right, and this team's about to start circling the drain, then I think the trade – I don't know in season what team out there is like, got to have Derrick Henry right now.
Right.
I'm not saying – I mean, I think if you could get him at low cost, sure, add him to your backfield. But the quarterback, that's different. I mean, the Jets are a team that could be really good in the AFC, as loaded as the AFC is, if they had okay quarterbacking. If they had decent quarterbacking, they, like, to me, that's a 10-11 win team, and that's worthwhile. So do they get serious about calling up the Titans for Tannehill or the Vikings for Cousins?
The other part about this is the matchup Sunday against Cincinnati. It's not gone overly well for Derrick Henry the last couple of times they've played.
They've done a good job against him.
The playoff game he had under 100 yards in that game. Now he's coming back off the injury. So how healthy was Derrick Henry in that game? I don't know. I mean, it's the first game back after he missed, you know, half a season. So I don't know how much stock I put into that one. But the numbers are what they are. Last year, 17 carries, 38 yards for Derrick Henry. That's 2.24 yards an attempt. So Cincinnati has done a really good job of bottling him up the last couple of times that they've played him. So is that going to change on Sunday, or is there a formula that the Bengals have figured out to where they're just not going to let Derrick Henry beat you, and they're going to force the Titans to beat you through the air with Ryan Tannehill?
Yeah, and to the texter who just said, you know, less Tajay Spears, see, that to me, this could be a game where the existence of Tajay Spears on your roster is a good thing. I, you know, we saw it against, I think, the Chargers in particular. what it can look like with both of them going. It's a different look. It's a different challenge for the defense. And there, again, talk about keeping the defense off balance. That's one of the ways you can do it with this roster. So I think Spears could have a key role in this game. But I think Derrick Henry needs to have every opportunity to have a key role in every game.
I agree. And, I mean, at some point, you know, we talked yesterday about Burks, right? And you got to get him going. I mean, Henry is still a vital part of this offense. You've got to find a way to get him going as the season goes on here, or you're just probably not going to have much of a chance offensively. I said it. He's got 163 yards through three games. So you're talking 54 yards a game pretty much is where he's at. I mean, that's a far cry from the Derrick Henry that we're used to seeing. Now, again, Sunday is what it is. It was horrible. I mean, I want to say last year he played okay against the Giants in the first game. He did nothing against Buffalo in the second game, and then he started to kind of take off from there. So, you know, by no means am I saying that Derrick Henry and his production, there's just no chance this year, but they do need to get him going a little bit because it's been, from just purely a numbers standpoint, lower than we're used to seeing through the first three games.
It fits the narrative of Derrick Henry as a slow starter. I personally think that Derrick Henry as a slow starter probably has more to do with offensive lines starting slow, which is a consistent thing really across the league, but I think especially with the Titans in some of these years, you know, they've had issues this or that, whether it's suspension, injury, young players not ready, whatever it is. The question is, like, how much better can this – I mean, certainly this one can get better than being atrocious, which is what it was Sunday, but how much better?
Well, and by the way, just real quick exercise in this discussion. When you think of the two best offensive lines in the NFL, who do you think of?
Definitely the Cowboys. There's an obvious second team that I'm forgetting.
See,
there's a lot of other good ones.
There are two teams that I think
of. The Eagles.
Yep.
Yeah, Eagles and Cowboys.
Eagles, Cowboys. The other team I throw in there is San Francisco.
Yeah.
Guess who?
All in the NFC, by the way.
The top two rushers are Christian McCaffrey, San Francisco. DeAndre Swift, Philadelphia. Yeah. By the way, Tony Pollard, fifth. Offensive line's a big deal in the running game.
And DeAndre Swift is a very good player.
Yeah.
But DeAndre Swift is not that level of back, in my opinion. He's a very good player. And there you go.
It's a big deal.
I mean, Derrick Henry's, this is like what some people don't want to acknowledge. Right now, people are, I think, overly worried about him.
Yeah.
And also back then when it was great, they'd absolutely underrated how important the offensive line was in that. The 2019 offensive line into 2020 was top five.
Coming next, we'll be joined by Paul Daner Jr. He covers the Bengals for The Athletic. We'll look ahead to the matchup for the Titans coming up on Sunday. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Thursday morning. Looking ahead to the Titans and the Bengals coming up on Sunday at Nissan Stadium. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Paul Daner Jr., who covers the Bengals for The Athletic. Paul, good morning. How are you?
What's going on? Good morning.
Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. Paul, the offense for the Bengals, do you feel like they started to figure some things out in the second half on Monday night against the Rams? Where do you think they are right now offensively?
Figuring things out would be the key phrase. This is a group that came in with as much continuity and kind of star power as anybody in football, with these three receivers and Burrow and an offensive line that they think is the best that he's had since he's been here. But it's almost as if they've had to redo the way they operate offensively because of Joe Burrow's calf injury. You know, I mean, that he once he tweaked it in week two, they'd already kind of been working in a limited way. I mean, he was not under center. They're not able to roll him out much. You're not seeing all that off script kind of creative magic that's been a Burrow signature. And so everything is in the pocket, and it's him, and he can do that. Obviously, it's one of his strengths, but they're not fully operational yet. So they're figuring things out. Yes, you're seeing some semblances of it, but they're just going to be limited for a little while as he tries to gradually get himself all the way back to full health. We don't know how much farther he'll be back this weekend. he hopes, and they hope certainly, better than he was on Monday, where he was really gritting through it. But that's really where their limitations are that makes them different, and they are still kind of figuring it out as they go what they can and can't do.
Yeah, Paul, you had a great breakdown of this at The Athletic. Some things I hadn't even thought about, like they can't even really run outside zone, right? Because he can't accelerate to the handoff, or he has to be in shotgun. They've got some, like the menu is limited in the run game, which you would think would be the natural answer to maybe try to offset some of this, but that has not gone as well as hoped either, right? In terms of some of the underlying numbers.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I mean, when he said he was going to play, it was a little surprising. When he threw it 49 times, that was a lot surprising on top of that. But a lot of that was they're calling RPOs. He's just standing back there in the pocket, giving the play fake and throwing the quick hits where there's not a ton of stress necessarily on him, even as much as it would be if he was giving it out. And the line, you know, to their credit, did a pretty nice job protecting where they felt comfortable with him standing back there. And he took a couple of licks from Aaron Donald, but who doesn't? And so it's kind of a thing where they feel like, yeah, the run game sounds like a nice thing to lean into. It hasn't been as efficient as they'd like it to, partially because they're limited in all the runs that they can call. And they also use so much of that quick game as an extension of their run game. You know, even if it's just however many times they just threw in the flat to Ja'Marr Chase, well, that's a run. And that's a scary one for defenses, and because, you know, what makes one guy miss and he can go a long way. I specifically remember the Titans divisional playoff game when the Bengals offense was struggling for a while and just one quick one to Ja'Marr kind of helped break them out. So that's how they view it. It's yeah, you're throwing it more, but it's a little bit of having to be creative with that as an extension of the run game to try to get some efficiency on early downs.
Paul, you bring up Ja'Marr Chase. How much differently are they using him this year? I mean, I'm watching that game Monday, and he's in the slot. He's outside. I saw him line up at the backfield in one play. Mm-hmm. How much different has the usage been with him so far this year?
This has really been an extension of last year. You know, we saw at the tail end, really during their postseason run in 2021, they started moving him around more, and it was a lot for him to handle at that point as a rookie, but he started doing it. Last year, they kind of unleashed a full package, more in the backfield, much more in the slot, motions, jet motions, all of the any way just to kind of free him up and run stuff for him. You saw that all last year. This has felt a lot like that. There's been, you know, maybe a few extra wrinkles in there, but for the most part, you know, any way they can get him the ball is good. And honestly, they hadn't been getting him the ball. The first 2 weeks, he had 70 yards. And, you know, he's still yet to gritty this year. I mean, he hasn't scored a touchdown. So they're still kind of looking for it. But you saw Monday night, and Burrow said it specifically. And I've kind of been terming it like anyone in their life when you're in times of crisis, like the Bengals kind of were on Monday, go back to the thing you know you do best. Go back to your number one, and that is Burrow to Chase. And so Burrow said, I'm feeding my guy. I'm leaning into that when I'm hurt. And you saw that on Monday night.
So the Titans just saw Myles Garrett and the Cleveland Browns, Paul, and it was ugly. It was ugly for the Titans. It was beautiful for Browns fans. I'm just wondering from your perspective, because I know it was rainy that day, and again, we've just been talking about the Bengals issues and everything, but how good do you think that Cleveland Browns defense is?
I mean, I tell you, that was the perfect storm, no pun intended there, on opening day, where, you know, they already knew, like, Burrow was a little limited in what he was going to be able to do back there. Okay, now the field's a little wet, and so you're even more nervous about his movement. And now you can't grip the ball as well. And now guess what? This Browns defense is an absolute wrecking crew, and they're getting after you. And, you know, you can see Jim Schwartz doing new things with all these weapons and Garrett, and their corners really cover, which is kind of the part that people aren't talking enough about with that Browns defense. I mean, they can really cover well. That gives them even more time to rush. And it's a nightmare. It was a nightmare for the Bengals that day. I mean, they couldn't do anything. And it was obviously a nightmare for the Titans. The Browns are real. If they can get anything resembling quality quarterback play out of Deshaun Watson, they're a scary team in the AFC, because they've always had the talent, and they've always looked like they should be able to be that good defensively. They just never have put it together, but maybe Jim Schwartz has figured it out. I think they're going to do that to a lot of teams this year.
Paul Danner Jr. with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. Paul, what have been your impressions of Cincinnati defensively so far this year?
Yeah, this is where it's got to be for them right now. And what you saw Monday night was a big deal for this team, not just to win, but for the defense to show, hey, we can throw you on our back for a while you guys get all the way back offensively, because that's what they need. They need to win games sort of an old slobber knocking AFC North style, where you play a little ball control and a little field position and let your defense go win you some games. They built this defense to win a Super Bowl. It has depth. They have nothing but veteran proven starters across every level that they've paid or extended or use high draft picks on. And they have used their last 7 day 1 and 2 picks on the defensive side of the ball. And only 2 of those are currently starting. They're just guys in rotation pieces. They're built for depth. I mean, they have depth at premium positions. And so they're ready for the battle of attrition. And but that was the first time on Monday where you saw it come into kind of full throat of looking like a defense that can really change the dynamics of a game and carry this team for, 3 to 4 weeks as they get Burrow's calf all the way back.
So, yeah, just on that, Cass, so is the idea, because I kind of thought maybe it would just make sense to try to grind one out against the Rams, rest him, and get it going. Like, they do feel like he'll be able to make kind of, as long as he doesn't do anything in games, incremental progress there and look more like the guy who makes all these off-schedule plays at some point this year?
Yeah, I think the idea is you got to get through a few weeks avoiding the setback. They were so close. They kind of gutted out week 1 and then got through almost all of week 2, in which their offense really came together and looked good, and he played well in the second half. And then he tweaks it on the second to last play of the game, and you're right back to ground zero, essentially. Of just the idea is it's feeling it is doing better. He is able to move around, but they got to just avoid a setback in these games and continue to manage it during the weeks. And then you feel like over the course of the next 3-4 weeks, he should be able to be back to be fully himself, but they want to try to make sure they're winning games along the way. But it's a risk. I mean, it's part of it, but it's something that he's just got to learn how to manage, and they've got to learn how to manage a little bit right now. He's not going to be on Sunday. You're not going to see that guy who's spinning out of guys in the backfield and running all around. It's just not who they are or he can be right now, but they feel like he can get there. The key is win a game, avoid a setback. Those are kind of the 2 boxes they're trying to check right now.
Well, Paul, we're looking forward to the game coming up on Sunday. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning, and thanks for being with us. We'll talk to you soon.
No problem. Have a good one. We'll see you this weekend.
Absolutely. Paul Danner Jr., our guest on Robbie and Rex Road, covers the Bengals for The Athletic. Coming up next, it is time for the Rob Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. We will do that next. Make sure you join Jared Stillman, Chris Sanders, and Derek Mason at Teddy's Tavern, located across from the Bridgestone Arena Plaza this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30. They'll break down the Titans Week 4 matchup against the Bengals and give you the latest updates before the game. Our NFL pregame show is presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment and The Beast Unleashed. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now!
Now on Robbie and Rex Road.
With the Tennessee Oilers, gonna get all over you. It's that time of the day, time for the Rob Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. You can check it out every morning at 7:45. The Rob Rant or the Rex Rant. We'll take your thoughts as always. 615-737-1025, our phone number. So there's a couple different ways I could have gone with this. I thought about ranting about people at the YMCA on the track getting in my way and walking 3 wide when there's 3 lanes. But I feel like a lot of my rants
sound like Ohio drivers.
Yeah, pretty much. Like I feel like a lot of my rants are about people getting in my way. So maybe I should work on myself a little bit. Stop getting so mad about people getting in my way.
I mean, that's your journey, man.
It is.
Yeah, I'll let you go on it. It's your birthday.
It's true.
Happy birthday, Robbie.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I think I'm going to go with the Titans part of this, though, because, believe me, I understand the frustration of Titans fans. They are 1-9. in their last 10 games. So when you're 1-9 in a 10-game stretch in the NFL, I think there are all sorts of conversations that start to become fair, right? I mean, from the quarterback part of this with Tannehill to obviously they've fired a general manager and have hired another one in that span to the head coach. So I'm not saying that the conversation about Mike Vrabel and the job that he's doing and what that means for the future of the Titans is not a valid one, because I think it is. I will say, though, Joe, I am kind of surprised this week and a little bit dumbfounded by how many Titans fans that I have seen that are ready to move on from Mike Vrabel. Like, it's kind of astounding to me, just based on what he's done and the type of coach that I believe he is. Like, we talked about this with Koharski yesterday. I think Mike Vrabel is still a very good coach. I think what you're seeing right now with the Titans is they've seen a roster that's just gone down the tube. And now not only has the roster gone down the tube, some of the guys are starting to get a little bit older and they're phasing some of them out, bringing in new pieces, all those things. And we'll see how they respond to that starting on Sunday against Cincinnati. But, it wasn't good against Cleveland. The offensive line's a big problem. And Vrabel has a much bigger hand in the roster part of it now, we think, as they move forward. So all that's going to continue to become fair as we start to evaluate this roster. But I am just a little bit dumbfounded about like how many Titans fans actually want to move on from Mike Vrabel right now, because I still think he is a very, very, very good coach in the National Football League. And it kind of boggles my mind that as many Titans fans as I've seen this week are there. And I get it's frustrating. You're after just a terrible performance against the Browns. So maybe some people are saying that don't actually believe that. They're just mad after the Browns game, and I guess I understand that. But it's been a little eye-opening this week to me.
Yeah, I'm with you, and this is something – it's a general topic we've talked about a lot, and it's something that I guess as long as I'm doing this, I'll always struggle to some extent with, which is just how when you have a vocal minority – which, absolutely, this is a vocal minority for sure.
Yes. Okay?
But how minute is it? We know how vocal it is, but how – like, really – could we actually do a full poll of Titans fans? And if you did, what percentage are actually in any way thinking that they'd like Mike Vrabel to not be their coach anymore?
Right.
I got to think it's a very low number.
I think.
But you're right. I mean, look, I bet you right now, if I go to the text line, I got somebody making a case for Vrabel to be fired. And, there are people who are fed up with him. And I'm with you. It's a little bit surprising. It's just 9-10, one. Usually 9-10 in the NFL means we're talking about a terrible team, right?
Correct.
And also, I think some of it is, the way Vrabel handles some things publicly, and then some of it is just the awfulness of this particular last game.
Jeff from Hendersonville says, come on! He used a second-round pick on Will Levis, who's now our third-string quarterback. This is from Jeff on the text line. So is that, are you saying that that's the reason that they fire Vrabel is because Will Levis was drafted?
Well,
that now, ultimately could end up being the reason why Vrabel gets fired. I don't know. A lot of it's going to come down to how he plays, right? When he eventually gets in there.
But it's an interesting argument on Vrabel, which does reflect where things are going, which is we're talking about Vrabel as a GM. That's a GM criticism of Vrabel.
Yeah.
Right? Rand Carthon's a GM.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, that is where things are going. So the pressure and the scrutiny, the breadth of the scrutiny, okay, breadth, I didn't say another word I said yesterday accidentally, the scrutiny will
Banner Day on the text line yesterday, by the way.
Yeah, will increase for Vrabel. But it really is. I heard this from Jared yesterday after he got his charity victory from me. He hates people saying, well, if you fired this, and who could you hire? Well, sorry, but, I will use that in the case of Vrabel, which is, okay, so you want Vrabel out, so who's better? Yeah, I understand. There are coordinators out there who could be good, whatever. I mean, Vrabel has established something, and look, when you have different players coming and going, it's no guarantee. Maybe there is a shelf life thing
could
with
be.
Vrabel's voice.
I don't know.
I mean, that happens. So, I think you have to keep an open mind. But also at this point, I actually think there's no scenario. I think there's no scenario this year that would not have him in this job next year if he wants to be in the job. I don't think that there's a scenario. Now, if it's terrible, 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 and it's not because they traded away Tannehill or whatever and sort of fake tanked, then, you know, then okay. Then I think next year, certainly, there's going to be a lot of scrutiny, and maybe Amy Adams Strunk is actually starting to get antsy. But right now, there's nothing. This is – it's a 1-2 team, and you have a very good coach.
The best ever. The personnel part of this is going to be very interesting as they move forward here because – and hear what I'm saying here because, you know, I'm about to say something that people are going to be like, what are you talking about?
Hmm.
And I'm not comparing them as coaches. But Bill O'Brien, right, who Vrabel is very familiar with, he was actually, in my opinion, pretty good coach. Like, did a pretty good job as coach.
Oh, absolutely.
Was winning the AFC South left and right on a regular basis. And I thought he did a really good job.
The
and
playoffs weren't kind to him, but he was a very good coach.
He was doing a good job. And then, because he was doing such a good job, he was given more responsibility. He basically became the general manager. He started making stupid decisions as the general manager, including trading DeAndre Hopkins. And that's ultimately why he got fired, right? Is because he took on more responsibility, and he wasn't very good at it, and then everything came crashing down, and that was it. I'm not saying that like the Titans are getting ready to come crashing down, but Vrabel is taking on more responsibility. What's the balance of him moving forward being judged as a coach and as what they do personnel-wise? Like, what does that balance look like as you're factoring in the entire Vrabel, I guess, equation moving forward?
There's no more – I mean, there's no more – like, no one blames it for A.J. Brown, which is how they should feel.
Right.
That's over, right? There's no more, sorry, Rand, what'd you do, Rand? I mean, some people may want to do that, but that's not the way you should look at it. Just like in San Fran – you know, San Fran is a Super Bowl contender, even though they made a massive error with Trey Lance, which is incredible, right? But everything they do, good or bad, people look at Shanahan. I mean, yeah, John Lynch is the GM. Good job, John. But they look at Shanahan.
Right.
Derek in Nashville has a good text. He's wanting to fire Vrabel, the disease of moderate success. He hasn't gotten him over the hump, so people immediately think it's his fault. If he had control of this roster 2 years ago, this team would still have A.J. Brown, and the ceiling would be much higher than it is right now. I think he's a way above average NFL head coach. Moving on from him would be a giant mistake. I basically agree with all that.
Josh on the text line says, anyone that wants Mike fired right now is stupid, plain and simple. The kicking carousel is one thing. The coaching carousel is even worse. As a fan base, we do not want that. This is from Josh in Columbia. We do have a text that says, does Amy want a mediocre team going into the new stadium? I guess insinuating that if you keep Vrabel, you're going to have a mediocre team heading into the new stadium.
Well, what owner is like, you know, I'd like to have a mediocre team for a few years here. What do you think? Yeah, of course, you know, the whole, like, the team going to the stadium, dude, I mean, it's hard to win in the NFL every Sunday. And so every year the draft is huge and free agency is huge. And, like, this idea that you're trying to, like, prospect your way to a good team when the stadium opens, what? It's the freaking NFL.
By the way, that's 4 years from now.
Right. They could rise to, like, Super Bowl contender and also be, like, 3-14 within this span. Or both things could happen. Like, who knows? I never have understood that.
Like 4 years ago, Marcus Mariota was still a starting quarterback at the Titans. You know how much could
not
change
for long.
In 4 years? Yeah, not for long. It was getting ready to change. Yeah. But you know how much could change in 4 years?
And
in
4 years before that, they were the worst team in the NFL.
Exactly.
So 4 years ago, they got to they got within a half of the Super Bowl. 4 years before that, they were the worst team in the NFL.
Yeah.
And now they are about to go 15-2. And you all apologize to Mike Vrabel.
I'm just saying, I understand the frustration. It's been a little wild this week to see some of the Vrabel talk.
Yeah.
Now, again, look, there's a lot of pressure as they move forward. If they're 1-5 at the bye week, it's just going to get louder. It's going to be louder and louder around Vrabel and the Titans.
Yes.
From the fan base, at least.
It is. And I don't think that it's going to leak into Amy Adams Strunk's ears. I don't think.
I don't think so either.
I mean,
I refuse to say anything that's absolute with her anymore.
If she made him draft Will Levis, then Vrabel can't be fired for that either, by the way, Jeff from Hendersonville.
Right.
Just keep that in mind.
102.5, 106.3 The Game, your home for Nashville Predators hockey. Tune in for player interviews and the latest updates from Preds training camp as the team preps for the 2023-24 season. Coverage presented by the New Cumberland Development. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. We'll get into all things NFL with him for the next 30 minutes. Looking forward to that. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.